Next case is 98781, District Attorney Counsel versus Michael Jackson.
Oh, Lord.
Because we have to swear in the lawyers, too.
Mr. Jackson.
This case is testimony of Powell. Your leader has three witnesses that are opponents of mine in the Monroe case, which in fact is a report on a separate case, number 98-710. Basically, in late 1996, deliberation and deposition being taken in jury court. After the break, I asked the judge to come and rule on objection of my questions. Judge ruled, and then the leaders of all witness number one, number three. Witness number one alleged that during the break, without provocation, I had made some quite obscene insults to witnesses number two and three. The judge then moved this all to the courtroom without hearing, which is about disciplinary complaint. Went through a three-member panel, and 6 months later, before the issue of court, that court, based on one step, conduct will recommend a 6 month suspension, say an indemnification of 12 hours of legal education and professions. To this, I have two objections. First, Lawrence report, and I'll direct your attention to paragraph 18, which I think is the center sentence of the report, relies in part on the trial judge's hearing as proof of the accusations. But the hearing should not be used. First, as a three-member panel, the chair stated explicitly that the panel would not rely on the hearing, but would make it on the plaintiffs. After that, the chair repeatedly truncated my attempts to show the house a due process by the judge at the hearing, which is why I didn't call the judge, so she wasn't to speak. The transcript of the hearing is Exhibit B with the relator's objections. And the judge assumed my guilt before the hearing. Your introductory comments show that.
Jackson, if I understand the scenario of how this sort of happened, I think it is to be clear as well. Mr. Bermgardner, I think it
is. Eyewitness number one, yes.
Bermgardner, witness number one, approached the judge in the hallway and said, these are things that Mr. Jackson said. So he repeated for her in the hallway before the hearing all the things that he alleged. Is that correct?
Not quite, Your Honor. What happened was that after I got the judge to come and rule, and she did, then Mr. Bermgardner in the jury room got that, yes.
But that was before the hearing?
That's right.
So then she immediately convened a hearing, correct?
At my suggestion.
But this is a contempt hearing, I understand, and it's indirect contempt because she did not choose to make the hearing, correct?
That's correct, except that she didn't say what kind of hearing it was until that way.
But I had trouble hearing myself and all my research in the case of the literature, and she was not a good friend. She did not, did she give you under 27052 a charge in writing and file for the court?
No, Your Honor. I think the whole thing is quite appealable, but she's never made an appeal.
And she specifically refused you right to counsel to ask you one.
Yes.
And she gave you no opportunity to cross-examine.
She limited me to make this statement.
She let you make this statement, that was it, and she never has journalized this to this day, 2 years since.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
She has not journalized her entry to this day, 2 years since.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. And it's because of those circumstances themselves and the fact that Chair of the Three-Member Panel specifically said he wouldn't rely, he wouldn't, well, that the panel would make its own findings.
I'm sorry, I have one more question. she never separated witnesses, that correct? She had witness one testify from the notes and two and three that they agreed with the notes.
Pretty much, which is pretty much what happened in the jury room before. Which is why that part of paragraph 18, where the board relies upon the judge's hearing, I have a problem with that device. The other part of paragraph 18, the other evidence stages, is everything the testimony of one of the witnesses, one, two, and three, Mr. Bringardner, Mr. Bellamy, paragraph 18 says that their testimony, according to 10, these quote, no doubt, quote, that the insults occurred in open court setting. Now, just to check this line, I don't believe that whatever happened was in open court setting. I just believe that the agreement of deposition my argument is that the evidence is simply not clear and convincing. It should not produce a firm conviction as to the facts. And well, I'm asking you to...
If we get by the possible error there was in Judge Miller's hearing, if we get by that and go to the credibility issue, which you seem to argue that there was your word against three others, and that that wasn't clear and convincing evidence that you used the language that you used, which was, if it was used, it was certainly far less than you expect of lawyers. Where's the clear and convincing issue there? I mean, it seems to me that if the panel decides to believe three persons who said they heard the same thing, and you say, well, I didn't say it, why can't the panel believe that? I mean, where's the credibility issue here?
Well, the credibility issue, Your Honor, is, well, first, I'm not really asking you, or the court, to weigh my credibility versus theirs. I'm not asking you to...
But you say there isn't clear and convincing evidence, so somehow we have to decide that to adopt your view of this, we have to decide that what the panel heard, or read and heard, was not sufficient, did not meet the standard for them to make a decision.
That the three witnesses themselves did not meet that standard. And that's something I think you can consider, not because you have to weigh the evidence, but because you do have the right to examine the evidence that was offered for yourselves to see if you decide to start doing this. Not because you're balancing it against me.
But that's where I have a problem, because I was very upset when I read this case. I read not the whole transcript. I read the whole transcript because you quote just parts of it and I wanted to see it all in context. And as I read this, this thing consists of about almost 200 pages. About 10 of the 200 pages that I could best make out, 10 to 15, is actual testimony that you are allowed to present in this case, because about 40 pages of it is you and the commissioner arguing over whether you can even cross-examine witnesses. And so I have, when I look at what you're trying to say, I can't even evaluate it because you weren't allowed to present it. And so all the arguments you make are trying to discredit witnesses aren't even before us, because it seems to me you weren't even allowed to project them. That's the gist of what you're trying to say, is that we don't have a full hearing in front of us to even make a credibility determination, because you were prevented from even talking on those issues?
Well, I don't know about the front part of your sentence, Your Honor, but I agree that this is the last part. Yes, to a large degree, I was prevented from crossing on that. And I think this ties into your question, too, sir. What I attempted to do during the hearing, the related entire case consisted of these three witnesses. Again, numbers one, two, three, convenience. All of them, as I said, are opponents in the ongoing case, two counsel and one partner. During the case, and which I attempted to show my cross-examination points, all three have a history. This is not my oral statement. This is all documents in the record of making filings, some supported statements, exaggerations, and in fact, actual false and bigots in the one-point case when you off the case. number three did actually testify.
Were you allowed to offer that to the panel?
I'm sorry?
Were you permitted to offer that to the panel?
Hampered in large part. I hate to simply refer you to my brief. On pages 6 through 10, I think I discussed a lot of instances where the judge determined that I would not be excluded and cut off lots of questioning when I was simply attempting to do it. Yes.
Let's get down to the real basics of why we're here. We're not here on contempt. We're here on was there a violation of the disciplinary rules? You were charged with making improper statements to witnesses. I guess my question is, because we're really just looking at a penalty now, that's really what's being objected to. If you had it to do over again, would your conduct be the same, or would you do something different?
Would I do something different?
Okay, thank you.
What I would do would not. Well, that day, I believe the record reflects it, and I think the record of the actual deposition reflects it, that transcript is here. I couldn't shout. I couldn't barely talk. I had a severe flu of some kind. Well, my testimony about this is in the transcript, which I think Tony was read, and the excerpts are in the briefs. And what I did when debated beyond belief was give it up, take a break, and mumble to myself as I went to a bathroom. This is what I told them next. Now, I wouldn't mumble.
Did you make the comment about you give Jews a bad name? Did you make that comment?
No. And this.
So these people made that up?
Yes. I've had this counsel, if I may, Mr. Fagan's father, approach me in court immediately after a session one day and went, just asked me, call me a Jew. I have never seen such a thing used as a tactic in my life. If I had to do now, because of tactics like that, I wouldn't take the case. Never mind my client is my wife, and the appeals court upheld my right to do it. I wouldn't do it. This case isn't worth it. But I've never come across anything like this. This case has ruined my career.
When you answered Justice Douglas's question, that you acted differently, you didn't mean that you wouldn't make the statements that you were sorry you made the statements that you made. You deny making all the statements that they say you made, don't you?
Well, I have been getting up to myself and making various, what I call it, the three-panel hearing standard insults. But this...
What are standard insults?
Oh, Judge, I didn't like doing it in front of another one doing it now.
Give me a general.
MFSOB, as I'm tottering off to the bathroom, I'm talking to myself. I'm not saying anything that they said. This is really gross stuff that they said. I don't want to be in the sand. But I can't prove I'm in the sand.
I guess I don't understand why three of them would make this up. I think that's the problem the panel had, was that here are three persons who say they heard the same thing and without any motive to make it up, I guess, except you say they've been filing affidavits against you, but that's on the record, apparently.
Well, two things, Your Honor. First, it isn't really three people who said the same thing. It was witness number one, and witness number, Mr. Greger, and witness number two basically said, yes, I pretty much agree with that.
Yeah.
And now the three men were going to say, well, I don't really have a recollection. And witness one, witness number three, and witness number two, the opposing party. The opposing party, who had some elaborations of his own, which he was inconsistent at the hearing. Again, we have the three opponents in the outgoing case as witnesses. The relator did not produce a disinterested witness to witness number two before. In the brief, I say it was the judge's bail of action. I think it was the judge's legal research. Supposedly that person could always in the hall that was not produced. Supposedly witness number one, Mr. Bringard, was reading from notes he made on this. The notes were never produced. They were required to be produced. The relator's cases, I've discussed them in my brief. Basically what's happened in the end is that the board decided on a lesser function that the panel recommended. I'm asking the court to dismiss them. The evidence produced isn't clear and convincing because the history in the case of allegations, and the most extreme of which was an affidavit drafted and signed by witnesses number 2 and 3, where they admitted it was false. The purpose was to get me off the case. They admitted they were strictly adhering to the truth. And this was not used by the chair to affect their credibility at all.
Is that in the record? Is that documentation in the record, this affidavit statement?
I tried to put it into the record, Your Honor, during cross-examination, but this is one of the areas I was limited. The chair wouldn't let me cross-examine on credibility, where the only evidence is his three pieces of oral testimony. If I may, that ongoing simultaneous appeal, 98-700, has a good deal more background on the case. I would reserve if I have a good picture.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Mr. Brown.
You would agree that there was a great deal of animosity in this case between the two parties, would you not?
There's no question, Your Honor, that there is a great deal of animosity.
And you read from the excerpt of the deposition at the time, it's pretty outrageous.
I would disagree that it's outrageous from a professional standpoint, but I think you also, Your Honor, it's hard for me to distance myself from the fact that I do know a great deal about the underlying case.
All right. Let's continue on. There was an affidavit of disqualification that was granted and overturned
at the
Court of Appeals,
right? Yes, and you're aware of the grounds for the affidavit of disqualification. Oh, yes. Because Mr. Jackson was going to be a witness. He lives in the property adjoining the Bellamy's.
That was the reason for the affidavit to be denied at the Court of Appeals, except for this.
Yes, that's correct.
And there were lots of other incidences that happened between these two parties with a great deal of animosity.
No question.
So you would agree with me that even though you have three on one side and one on the other, there is a lot of motive in this case. And if a person wanted to lie, there would be a lot of motive. And the issue of the credibility of three against one, you would agree with me that that's part of the motive, right?
I disagree with you on that, Your Honor.
Don't you have to believe the three and just believe the one? Because he's totally denying it.
He's totally denying it. He's denying it from point one, from when Judge Noel went into that room, went into the jury room during Mr. Bellamy's deposition, and Mr. Brainard brought up the remarks of Mr. Bain, and I'm not sure which from the top of my head.
Let's go forward to the hearing event. We have the hearing, and I would just quote to you some of the things that I copied down. When you go at great length, part of your direct goes into great detail on the affidavit of disqualification, and then we finally get into the cross. And the cross is constantly...
I'm sorry, Your Honor, the affidavit of disqualification, who did I direct examine about?
Mr. Grimgardner. Justice Sweeney said things all the way through this, and that has no bearing. That was just said. It has nothing to do with this case. That has nothing to do with your case. It's only about the malice of the witness. The malice of the witness has no bearing. You're just trying to discredit the witness. That has no bearing on the case. You're just trying to show the witness has lies. That has no bearing on the case. I counted attempts by Mr. Jackson when he tried to introduce his evidence. Shut off his Joseph comments 25 to 30 times by Justice Sweeney. And 10 times we told him to hurry up and get on with the case. But his entire cost of substance was covered about 10 pages or 200. I guess my whole problem is whether he said these things or not, I can't even get to that because none of the issues of bias and credibility and malice, none of those were allowed to be explored. And to me, that's the whole crux of how you evaluate the testimony. And how you can cut a man off 25 to 30 times and never let us present his evidence of bias or testimony. I mean, these facts, I'm having a very hard time understanding that.
I think, Your Honor, a couple of different things, and I can address each one of those concerns. With regard to Mr. Jackson's attempt to show that the witnesses were biased, what he did was he took affidavits that he personally believes are contradictory. He declares one false and the other one, I'm not sure, not necessarily true, because they were opposing parties that day. So he disagrees with both of them. And he tried to get the panel to say, or the panel to believe, that because one witness would execute an affidavit that was somehow different, if we were arguing about point as to whether Mr. Jackson tried to take pictures of Mrs. Bellamy 90% of the time or 100% of the time, and she mows the grass, he was saying that in one affidavit they said 90% of the time, and another affidavit they said 100%.
I understand that, but like, you're not allowed to ever even explain what you're trying to do. You're not even allowed to, when the panel says you can't discredit the witness, that's not allowed. And the whole purpose of the process is to discredit the witness. He's not allowed to go into it so he can evaluate it without any error or
not. Except, Your Honor, that the method under which he was trying to impeach or show that the witnesses were biased had absolutely no basis whatsoever. If he had come up with other witnesses to testify that Craig Bellamy can't tell the truth or Dan Bringarter can't tell the truth, you know, then so be it. I mean, he would have obviously had to disclose those witnesses. I mean, I totally disagree with the characterization that he was not given a chance to show the witnesses had bias. He was. He doesn't have a way to do it because there is no bias. Those three witnesses no more wanted to sit on the witness stand and repeat that language than the man in the room. It wasn't their choice to be there. Judge Moore filed a complaint, not those witnesses. The witnesses were under subpoena. We later asked them to be there. I don't
think their bias or their personal interest in the case is anything that is allowed on trial.
Oh, I think it certainly is fair game. If it's properly presented. If he had a ruling from the court, for example, that Mr. Bellamy filed a false affidavit, boy, you bet I would have known about that, and you bet I would have had to deal with that. He did not. Mr. Jackson had his opinion that one affidavit is different than the other, and so that makes one false. That's all he had.
I just go for
instance.
I don't know anything.
You don't have
a chart.
Okay, I would like to address, too, the point that you asked Mr. Jackson earlier about Judge Miller's contempt hearing, and which is Exhibit B, and it is absolutely not used as proof that Mr. Jackson was appropriately found in contempt. It's not. We offered it and we stipulated to the accuracy of the testimony. That's all. It was used as cumulative testimony in order establishing that the witnesses gave testimony consistent with their previous testimony at a disciplinary hearing. That's all. We made no accusations about the fact that he was in fact found in contempt, and so that should be clear and convincing evidence that he violated certain disciplinary rules. That wasn't the point. The point was merely that the witnesses, those three gentlemen, gave consistent testimony from one hearing to the next. I don't have any comments about Judge Miller's procedural techniques as far as the contempt hearing. I don't know whether to this day, nor is it relevant, that she has not journalized it, it hasn't been appealed.
Well, I think it's relevant in that one of the chairman says is you should have got into that in the hearing. You should have explained, you should have crossed these people in the hearing. And when he tries to explain that Judge Miller didn't let him, he's cut off again by the chairman. So in that sense, I think it is relevant.
And the chairman knew that he didn't.
The chairman won't let him go into it now because he was supposed to go into it then, and he wasn't allowed to go into it then. Then you have a paradox that I don't see any way to get around.
But all three witnesses, and that's the reason I did it this way, I put all three witnesses on the stand at that disciplinary hearing. We might have succeeded with clear and convincing evidence if I only put Dan Bringarter on the stand. I don't know that because that's not what happened. I specifically decided that all three gentlemen should testify because that's who testified before. And Mr. Jackson implies that I somehow tried to hide something from him by not producing Dan Bringarter's notes. If you look at the transcript, which is page 35, when Dan Bringarter refers to his notes, that's all he does. He says, I took notes. Mark Fagan later in the transcript says, and Dan took notes. Not once does one of them say, and I read my notes, that's the only reason I know what I'm saying today. There's no reference to that. It's just another fact, like I had a blue suit on. I mean, I took notes, that's it. I think one other thing Mr. Jackson talks about is the fact that he believes Aaron Epstein, who's the bailiff for Judge Miller, was out in the hallway, and that I should have somehow called him to testify. It's absolutely not true. Mr. Jackson wanted Mr. Epstein to testify, somehow give exculpatory evidence. He should have called Mr. Epstein. I didn't have any reason to call him. And I don't think the court can imply that I tried to hide something from the fact that I did not call Aaron Epstein to testify. The objection that we later filed in this case is completely focused on the sanctions that was levied. The panel recommended that respondent be suspended from the practice of law for 6 months, for a year, actually, with 6 months of that suspension stay. The board then recommended that he be suspended for 6 months with the entire suspension stay. Relator believes that the panel's recommendation and actual 6 month suspension is more appropriate in this case. The panel saw Mr. Jackson. The panel watched him cross-examine the witnesses. Mr. Jackson, the reason Relator would even ask for any type of suspension in this case is because the evidence indicates Mr. Jackson has lied. He lied to Judge Miller, he lied to the disciplinary panel, and in denying the fact that the conduct occurred. That's not true. We had three witnesses provide evidence, and yes, they are his opponents. There is no question about that. I wish I had someone who wasn't. I don't. The facts are that they are his opponents, but the facts are that they were certainly close enough to Mr. Jackson to hear those comments. They were made during the course, at the beginning of a break. I don't know what Mr. Jackson said on the way to the bathroom. Perhaps he did say the, quote, standard insults, as he told Commissioner Barrett at the hearing. But that's not why we're here. Why we're here is because of the comments that Mr. Jackson made about the Fagans, about Craig Bellamy. If he just makes those comments and he comes clean and he says, yeah, I did it, I really lost my temper, I am really sorry, then perhaps we're looking at something like a public reprimand, or we're looking at perhaps no disciplinary sanction at all. But in this case, Mr. Jackson has continued the charade. He has continued to deny that he made those comments. As far as Mr. Jackson's complaint about whether the panel took a no count of three witnesses versus one, I don't know what other kind of evidence we could have presented. We had eyewitnesses of conduct regarding this comment. Those eyewitnesses testified. Mr. Jackson testified as well, and he denied it. The panel found that the three witnesses provided clear and convincing evidence. It's a totally different case. We're in a totally different situation. And I can't, obviously I'm an assistant disciplinary counsel, I'm not the disciplinary counsel, so I can't stand here and tell you, would there be no case? No, there might not be.
Okay, I thought that's what you just said.
Yeah, no, I meant to say there might not have been, but we would certainly be in a very different place than we are. And I have to tell you, the facts of this case, part of the reason that we are here, half the reason we're here is because he has denied that the conduct occurred. The first half is because it occurred, or there's evidence that it occurred, and the second half is the fact that he lied. There are two halves to this case.
And maybe he didn't lie, he did three or five, and we don't know that because we can never get the evidence to the record. That's the other possibility, that he denied that he really didn't do it.
I would respectfully disagree with that, Your Honor. I believe there's clear and convincing evidence that it did happen, that he did make those statements.
Was there any evidence that he has a history of this type of behavior?
He admitted at the disciplinary hearing making the standard insults, and that's a direct quote from him. And he went on to say what those standard insults would be. By his own admission, he served some time in the Air Force. By his own admission, those are the types of comments he makes. Now, was there any evidence introduced other than those particular statements by the witnesses I presented? No, absolutely not. He also makes comments in his brief, the respondent does, the fact that I was leading Mark Fagan. There are no objections to that. I would respectfully disagree with his characterization as well. I don't believe I was blaming him, but he did not object. He also claims that he was denied due process. In this case, the relator gave him notice of the charges against him. The complaint was never amended. He had notice of the original charges against him, and he had an opportunity to defend himself against those charges. There was no denial of due process. I think, though, Your Honor, if you look at Justice Sweeney's comments, he says to Mr. Jackson, is there a finding that that affidavit is false? And the answer is no.
There is a transcript of their admission in court that they have admitted they lied, and that transcript, that admission, is never allowed to go into by the chairman. I don't know what that transcript says, but that was one of the things he had a block on.
Mr. Jackson brought a transcript. He brought pieces of a transcript. Let's put it that way.
We can't talk about it because it's not on the record.
That's correct.
I don't know how to evaluate.
Except perhaps, Your Honor, if he brought the entire transcript, and if he had set the stage a little bit as far as where we are, he just, you know, I mean, clearly, and this isn't the record, I mean, you can get a feel for it from the transcript. He had pieces of the transcript that he wanted to introduce.
The chairman's objection is not because he wanted to use the transcript. The chairman's objection, or sustaining the objection, is not relevant. You're trying to discredit the witness, and that's not relevant. That's the basis, and that's what I, you know, I'm going to conduct a criminal trial about this. Well, I agree.
Okay, thank you. If there are no further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Mr. Jackson, you have 30 seconds. Reply.
Again, I'm not asking this court to find that the relator's witnesses testified falsely. It's testimony that I cannot prove they testified falsely. And I don't especially care if the relator thinks it's perjury for me to contradict that. I can't complain to what I didn't do.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion.